Hey, Rob.
Hey, Chris, is that you?
Yeah, it's Kelly and Chris. Lori is actually in New York for mandatory training, and from what I understand, Paul Wynn's office is closed today because of the hurricane.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We just got an email probably 10 minutes ago from somebody on their staff. Everybody's fine, and really, I think it's more precautionary because they're on the far west side of the cone, and we got confirmation that two offices in the state of Alabama were closed, but originally it wasn't the Montgomery office, so that must have changed in the last 24 hours.
Okay.
So you're just stuck with the two of us.
Yeah, I had to call with the Mobile group, and they were fine, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and Montgomery's central. They're really almost straight above us, but because the hurricane's going east to west, I guess they're closer on the edge of the path. And it's windy here. We never got more than a light sprinkle, but we're getting a lot of wind gusts in Pensacola.
Well, you're used to that, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, and I'm not ready. I mean, I hate it hits anybody, but if you've had two or three of these hit you in your lifetime, then you don't need to you're done. You're good for your life.
I know. I had, you know, we're over in Boca Grande. Now, I'm not there now. I'm in Indiana now. I spend the summers in Indiana, but they just sent me a picture of my boat, and it's still alive, you know.
That's
so
good.
We were in the eye of it, but I guess it just, you know, was a Category 2, but not a, you know, the storm surge was less than they expected. I mean, it was wonderful because it could have been just terrible.
Yes, yes.
I remember in 1972, the hurricane that came through and hit you guys, well, it hit Mobile primarily. I remember driving from Pensacola over there, Mobile, to pick up my MGB, and the road was gone.
Camille?
Camille, yeah, and it was completely blown out. The buildings, the hotels, all they had was the vertical sides of the buildings left. The interiors were completely blown out, like somebody had shot a huge gust of wind, or it was water that did it. The water just came up and went right through there. It just killed people. People stayed there. To, you know, those days they talk about having hurricane parties, you know.
Yep. So, well, they didn't have the 24/7. I mean, we had AM radio back then to tell us what was going on, so we didn't have the same type of notification either.
Right. You didn't have moment by moment. This has been the most heavily covered hurricane, I think, in the history of hurricanes.
I believe it.
But the stock market seemed to like it, and Rob Knapp sure liked it. And like you say, I've been through Charlie down there and this one and others. It's just nasty, and I don't want any more.
Yeah, and I just got a call from family. We have family in Jacksonville. They're without power on the far east side of the state. I mean, they're on the other side, but that thing was so wide. I think a lot of power outages. Something like 4.1 million to 5 million, I heard this morning, of people out of power in the state of Florida right now. And that's going to extend up into Alabama, Georgia, and eventually Tennessee, North Carolina. So it's going to be just a massive amount of people trying to get their power back on, which is a lot better than, you know, how bad it could be.
Right. Power is one thing, you know. Losing your boats and your cars and your houses and unfortunately, human life. But
yeah.
It was much worse in the islands. I saw pictures of the islands. And
yes.
Oh, it was just terrible.
Yes, I did see that as well.
Anyway, let's talk about you guys. How are you doing? We had a big week, week nine. There's a lot to cover in terms of acquisition.
Yeah, and it's
too much into that chapter, but it's so I'm really here to listen and to answer questions and help you guys.
So making the transition from organization to acquisition is in and of itself, I think, a big deal because it kind of we're probably feel like we're maybe halfway through the organization side, which I know we're actually much further than that. but we're already starting to hit some of the bumps. We had an interesting thing happen this last week, and because my partner retired, there are people that are on a one-year list, and the one-year list means we're going to make them butlers for a year until that year's over, and then they've got to go to another financial advisor just because they have personal relationships with our retiring financial advisor. And so we've hidden them in the closet knowingly and purposefully, and we had a great Supernova introduction meeting with one of our larger clients. And the next week, one of these small butlers called up and said, "When am I getting my meeting about my monthly calls and this new service model? Nobody called me yet." We didn't realize that a lot of these larger clients are also friends with some of these smaller clients. And like, oh, my gosh. So it's created a little bit of a problem for us to figure out how to work through. And then we've also had some just minor things with the intern that's working with us, just putting the mini-me's together. There's a little bit of inconsistency, and so we're working through those things. Nothing that's not normal and nothing that we can't, you know, get fixed. And then we're having the issue again of just getting people on the calendar, and we've probably had a couple of no-shows maybe.
No phone calls. I don't know about no-shows.
Yeah, maybe no phone calls.
Client fell through on their end.
Yeah, and then we've had, and I did exactly what you said, though. I'd call and leave a message and says, "Hey, if you call me back in the next 15-20 minutes, we're good. If you call back after that, talk to Kelly, we'll get you rescheduled for another time, or we can just wait until next month." So I purposely, you know, made those types of discussions. But all in all, it's going well. But then right in the middle, when you feel like you're up to your waders and getting the organization, you switch from acquisition, and so it's just a different focus.
Yeah, and the truth is that it, you know, that's why we made it a year-long program, because what I find is that people will give me, you know, you're being very honest, but a lot of people will give me the head nod, you know, and they're not listening. Because they're up to their, you know, elbows and alligators, and they just can't assimilate or think about really working on acquisition until they get comfortable with the huge change that they made. But we've got to teach the information somehow, you know, while we can't just wait and watch somebody work till they get comfortable. We have to keep moving.
I think if you talk to Kelly, you'll probably get two different, and Lori's not here, she's in New York, but if you talk to each one of us, we'd probably each say there were things that we were getting through pretty easily and things that we were struggling with. With me, one thing I've started to notice is it seems like the agendas for the next meetings come up quicker than they feel like they should. I think for the most part, the follow-up emails have gone really well, and I do sense a lot of positivity and from clients who we're introducing this to, especially if they've gone to their second meeting and they've had another agenda and another follow-up email, and they've gotten their client folders. But it seems like, oh, my gosh, it's Thursday afternoon, and we're panting across the finish line getting into Friday, and then realize, wow, we've got a lot of agendas to get out for this next week. And that's been a little bit of a growing pain for me.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's real. I mean, for God's sakes, there's a lot of work here.
Yeah.
The thing is, I just had I've been coaching a guy for about a year now, and he's in the Midwest. And he said, you know, this is a really interesting story. I had an FA who's wanting to retire come to me and say, "Look, you know, I've been watching you since you started doing this program, and I have to tell you, I'm really impressed." He said, "I watch you. You're calling all your clients every month. You've got your folders. You guys are organized. I know you give exceptional service, and I'm interested in doing a deal with you, but not interested in anybody else in the office." And I said, well, you know, that's pretty exciting when your brand is being noticed internally as well as externally.
Yeah.
And that, you don't think about that as something that's important, but in reality it is.
Oh, yeah. Because I think it's...
Yeah. these days when you've got baby boomers retiring in great numbers, particularly in our industry, it's important.
Yes.
So, you know, it's even though it's hard work and it's a pain sometimes and you feel like it's never done. This guy, I mean, if you hear him talk, he's so excited. He just is like, I'm so organized. I'm done every day. I have all that anxiety. And he said, Rob, you know, we went through a little bit of a correction in 2016, and with all these clients calling, and I'm talking about the market, and he said it was horrible. And he said, now I know that will never happen again. I don't care what kind of a correction we're going to go through. My clients are now trained.
Yeah.
And they're good, you know, and I get rid of the bad ones. So there is a huge bright light at the other end of the tunnel, but when you're in the middle of it, and then I'm introducing, you know, 7 different strategies for acquisition, you're like, stop.
Well, one of the surprises that's happened, and Kelly, I'm not sure this with you, but there were probably 3 or 4 of our top clients that have never done a plan, and they've just never, I mean, quite honestly, they don't need a plan, but they do. I mean, it's not like a plan is essential to make sure they can live in retirement. They've got more money and they know what to do with. But everyone that I've spoken to, Bob and Sarah Lee, Ken and Elizabeth, when I say, hey, here's our process, here's our commitment to service you going forward. And I said, it starts with a plan. I said, you've never done a plan, but I would really like to back up a little bit and go through a planning process. And they've all agreed.
That's great.
And really with one of these guys, I think that there's a few million out there that we still haven't gotten. I think we're well positioned this next year when I think he's selling another building that will take some of that in. The COI groups to me have been the favorite. I'm trying to adjust the mini me folder though, because I want them to see what we're giving to clients. But then, you know, we've changed some sheets out for clients we currently have in common. I met with one guy who I met with years ago, who is the CPA for 2 of my largest clients, and we never did anything together. We never exchanged any clients, but now here we are 12, 13 years later. We had breakfast this last week, and he loved this. And he even set out for us on the next meeting, he said, why don't I put together the things that I see financial advisors doing that really help me and 2 or 3 things that I want to talk about, maybe the month after you put together 2 or 3 things. So he's fully engaged, and he's a very well-respected CPA here in town. So that's been a lot of fun.
Well, there you go. You're already in it. I mean, you know, don't worry about all these. I mean, seriously, we can take these. The number one thing is the centers of influence, okay? That's the easiest thing to do. It's one of the hard things to be consistent with. And if you ended up doing the program plus regularly scheduled, you know, 6 good solid centers of influence that you're meeting with on a monthly basis, it'd be a huge win. That's enough. We can do these other things. And they work, but they're more designed to pick up on things that people do naturally. So, for example, if you naturally are a joiner and want to join boards and you're a giver, then that section on board membership is going to be really important to you, because you may be joining boards and you may be giving, but you may not be getting the kind of return on that time that you should be getting. And so we spend time on that. The mastermind group that we talk about this week is sort of the culmination of the center of influence model taken to another level, sort of a doctorate degree in centers of influence. It's something you definitely should do, especially if you're good at working with centers of influence. But it's not something that you're going to do overnight. It's probably going to take as long as Supernova takes, which is about a year. So I'd like you to get started thinking about it, but I don't want you to think about putting it together and doing it all at once, because it's the sort of thing that you done right is fabulous, done wrong, you just have to unwind it and start over.
Well, and of the COIs that I've met with, two of them I have met with a second time. The other four I've only met with once. And quite honestly, there's, you know, even though two or three feel really like the right ones, and one in particular, I'm still not sure if he's on board or not. I would think it would take months just to develop the COI relationships before you are willing to put them into a mastermind group.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Now, you want to, but you want to be cultivating we'll call them channels, okay? And you think of it as the guy that's at bat, on deck, and in the dugout, okay? So with centers of influence, like CPAs, you want to have your primary center of influence, a guy on deck, and a guy in the dugout, right? So it's kind of a channel that you're developing. So the critical elements for me, if I were you today, I would be building a niche mastermind group around entrepreneurs selling their businesses or baby boomers selling their businesses, which is probably more appropriate for your market, I would think. You know, 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day, well, a portion of those people are business owners, and they need to sell their business. You can be right at the end of that funnel. And my suggestion is you build a mastermind group around serving them. So there's nothing that you need to do that's going to be contrary to things you'd be doing anyway in terms of building a mastermind group. It's just in the end you could have this perfect team. So you want to have that, you want to start to think about, okay, I'm going to have five different channels here that I'm going to build that are all going to come together to create this entrepreneur or retiree mastermind group for entrepreneurs. And there'll be a CPA, an attorney, a business broker, a commercial realtor, a financial advisor, and we have an attorney in there, right? So those are the key elements of selling the business, and you might even have a consultant that, you know, helps them get ready or you can be the consultant. Get ready to sell their practice, sell their business. So you want to be cultivating those things with a secondary purpose of building this niche mastermind group, because once that's built, that group could be the group to go with for anybody in the community ever selling their business. And it's not like you're cutting somebody out. That's a specialty group that does that. Somebody says, well, I hear you're doing business with such and such. Well, that's a specialty group focused just on retirees, you know, people retiring and selling their business.
Yep.
And I think that's the hot thing. And, you know, if you can get that built in the next 12 months, that'd be incredible.
Yeah, there's a couple that have popped up that have, either through conversations I've had with some of the COIs. As a matter of fact, the first CPA I met with introduced me to something. He said, if you could figure this out, you could be a big asset to me. And so we've met, I think he and I met, Jeff and I met twice, if not three times. Yeah, twice. And he even gave me a book last time, and I've talked to some other financial advisors with Morgan Stanley who do this type of business. And so that's become a very, that's a niche within a niche, which is really nice, because that sub-niche is a wealthy sub-niche.
What's the niche happen to be?
Captive insurance.
Hmm.
So it is a individual or a company. It's an IRS code that allows companies to either add additional insurance or reinsure because they have enough money to do it. And when you invest, and it really is for people who can put at least $500,000 to $1 million a year into this insurance pool or policy, and the funds are invested with a financial advisor. They're audited, they're classified as insurance funds, and when you put the money into the insurance pool, it avoids taxation from the company. When you pull it out at a 15% dividend rate.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've done a lot of studies. So, I mean, you can see, if you have to have $500,000 to $1 million every year to put into this pool, it makes it a higher dollar issue. Plus, it introduces you now to people who can write those checks.
Right.
Plus, most of them tend to be business owners. So that's an area. That was the very first COI meeting I had, and it was just
holy crap.
Could not have gone better.
Now, is it ever actually used for insurance, or is it just a?
No, it is actively used for insurance, and as I've understood it, if you go through 4 or 5 years and you've never had a policy, then people start to look at it askew. You want to use it for claims.
Okay. So you're sort of self-insuring? Is that what you're doing?
Yes. I mean, in a very general sense, but again, it's an IRS code. Not only is it an IRS allowed thing, it's also on the IRS top 10 list of things they don't like. but Congress just recently raised the limit of what a company could put in each year. It's a real thing. But there's only about two financial advisors that I found within Morgan Stanley who specialize in this. The good news is that Morgan Stanley now allows it, you know, what we're doing. And I've had extensive conversations with one of them. It's led me to have conversations with other people in the business, so it's becoming a little niche-y area for me that this one CPA has introduced me to. So, and I've got another niche that I work in that's just about as screwy as that one, so I'm comfortable in that area. But that's just an example of something I didn't look for, but came across from one of these COI meetings.
It's really smart.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Hypothetically, let's just assume for conversation that I haven't read the book in the 3 extra weeks that you gave us to do it. Because it's amazing. Every time there's extra 2 or 3 weeks because of scheduling, how fast it goes by. So I jumped back in after this whole hurricane issue we've had this weekend and watched the video, and I saw the 96-4-2-2 review. And the one part, which I know this is probably in the book and probably in the material, but I've been in this business so long, if you said, hey, I need you to come up with 90 prospects, I could do it. But now that we have a new minimum, coming up with those 90, you know, qualified prospects that meet my minimum is going to be a little bit tougher than just coming up with 90 prospects. So that was
right,
my question.
It's a good question, and it's really interesting because the purpose of putting the 90 prospects in there was the same purpose as telling you the maximum number of clients that you can have is 100. Because some people will have hundreds of prospects. So the maximum, not the minimum, is 90.
Okay.
The minimum is determined by you and what you need. It's your closure rate. So based on your asset requirement, your target, your top 20% of your practice, it gives you 80% of your business, your target minimum, based on that, how many clients do you need to double your business? Okay. And the answer is approximately 30. Okay. If you take the top 20% of your practice, take the average of that, and you look at it and And you brought in 30 clients that look like those people, that would virtually double your business. Okay?
Okay.
So you can do the math and tell me maybe it's 35, maybe it's 25, but it's pretty close to the 30.
Okay.
All right? So that figure, you can get 10 of those a year. That's your goal. So the question is, how do we get 10 of those? And how long does it take us to close them? If they were in the pipeline, could we get 10 a year? If they're not in the pipeline, can we get 10 in a year and a half? Or is it going to take us longer? So those are the kind of questions you got to be asking yourself. How do we improve our closure rate? Well, for one thing, we improve the introductions that we get. Instead of getting random introductions from, our worst clients and CPAs that don't know what we're doing, we get highly qualified introductions from CPAs and attorneys and commercial realtors and others that know what we're doing, why we're doing it, and what we'll do for those clients. And those closure rates are then much higher because they're qualified and the people that are referring them to us have credibility with the clients already, with the prospects. So your closure rate is going to be higher than a random prospect that you get introduced to. So the more we're introduced by people that have credibility, the better we do. So the question becomes, out of, say, 50 introductions, can we close 10 of them? Again, depends, right? Depends on who the introductions are from and whether or not they're qualified. So we may need only 20 introductions or 30 introductions from qualified CPAs and attorneys and business brokers and others to close. Now, they may take a year or 6 months, but in some cases we'll be lucky and we'll get them in a month. But on average, so what you need to do is you need to start tracking when you get somebody into your pipeline. So you want to make a spreadsheet, figure out how many people do I have in the pipeline total? How many are basically introductions that I'm just meeting? How many are qualified? How many do you think I can close in the next 60 days?
We actually have a spreadsheet that we've used at the peak of our business that was very similar to that, with the probability of closure, amount of assets, and timelines. But I'll be honest, now that my partner retired and we've been going through all this, the pipeline is empty. So it's the refilling of the pipeline. I would even say our closure rate is fairly high, say higher than most, just because of the process that we had in place before. But like you said, it was random introductions. It could be a $200,000 client. It could be a $1 million client. And I would say half the people we didn't close because they didn't fit our. There's the objective and the subjective factor. They weren't a good fit.
Right.
But it's filling that pipeline back up with qualified people. When you were 70, I'm at 76 on my client list. 80% of that 70 is, or 50% of that 70 is below our new minimum. So I'm trying to get creative and think, how do we start pushing through that pipeline? And if it comes directly from the COIs, it may take a year to fill the pipeline back up.
Well, that's right. I mean, you can do it, and that's why, you may not like the variety of opportunities that I present to you, but they're designed to draw from different sectors, okay? Different ways of doing it. If you wait just for the centers of influence, it's going to take a long time. If you want to increase the rate of return, you improve, you take on more pipelines. So each one of these pipelines should generate prospects. Some are active and some are passive. The centers of influence, the mastermind group, those are active. The working with your community involvement, with your boards of directors, those are passive.
Yep.
They take more time, but they will generate bigger fish because in most communities, you can't get to the ultra-high net worth client through your normal channels. They only are available even for conversation through board meetings and things like that. So that's a longer term strategy, but it definitely works. Okay, so your niches is active prospecting. And in each niche, you create a center of influence that makes that niche work. So you gotta help me focus again on your niches.
So it's widows and divorcees was the biggest. Business owners is the second, and professionals, which we split up between doctors and lawyers, was the third. Now the overarching general niche is retirees, hands down, is the largest group of people, but those three inside it were probably the main three.
Do you take your retirees from any one organization?
No, it's Florida, so we have a lot of retirees here.
Is there any companies there that that you generate income from?
No, there's only one publicly traded company in Pensacola, and it's Gulf Power, which is Southern Company based out of Atlanta. And we have made some inroads, but I don't think we have one client, maybe one. We have one client that's a Southern retiree, maybe, and I can't think of who that is off the top of my head. So yeah, the Eli Lilly and the, that type of thing is not a Pensacola niche.
Yep.
So it's more of the people who come to Pensacola to retire who are in the military at one point and come back to Pensacola. The problem with niching military, and you know this personally, is there's a very, very small percentage of military retirees that meet our minimum. I mean, the pensions are great, but to find somebody who's got, $3 or $4 or $5 million as a retired military is not typical. Yeah.
What about admirals?
So there is one admiral I've got a good relationship with. I might go to San Diego if I really want to focus on admirals, but there's one in town that I know well enough that if I called him on the phone, he'd have lunch with me.
I mean, would admirals have enough money?
I don't know. You were in the business. You tell me.
Well, typically they make more money when they get out in some cases than when they stayed in. All these guys on CNBC and
The one I know, I think he's fully retired.
Yeah. Is he a client?
No. And he's on one of the boards that I sit, and so we work together. I just really, it's a catch-22 when you're on one of these boards and you have he's currently serving as the president of this organization. And you begin to open the door and they finally sit down and you realize they have $500,000. And you're like, wow, I've walked down a path now I don't know really how to turn out of. So I don't pursue that much, but I do get the feeling that he is not, I think he's got a great pension and I think he's probably got a decent sized investment, but I don't think he hits my minimum.
Yeah. So let's skip them then. Even though they'd be fun guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd be fun. But any other niche of retirees that come down there that are, you know, we have, for example, on my island in Boca Grande, we just get these niches of, you know, we have all these Dartmouth grads, and then we have all these guys that used to work for Price Waterhouse, and it's just really interesting, you know. They all tend to, not always, but there tends to be a group, they tend to group together a little bit.
Well, I think you'll see that in Destin, which is an hour and 35 minutes from us. There's another office there. But Pensacola is, by and large, a more blue-collar, military, retiree town. So it's not going to look like a Boca as much as it is, you know, just, so there's just, that's, I think people who have benefited from the military community and their businesses fall more into a niche for us than those who are actually in the military or retire in the military.
So you have typically a lot of businesses that are mom and pop and you know, they can sell them for $5 million, but they're, you know, they've been in business forever, right? That kind
yes.
of thing?
Yes.
So I think this niche mastermind group is perfect for that. So that's what I would be, I'd be working on that, you know, gradually over time, build that up until you have that perfect group to serve that particular market. That's, you know, those that serve the military or serve the community and have a business and want to sell it, we're the guys to come to.
Yeah.
It's a little bit general for me. I like it even more niche-y than that, but that's about all, that's as close as I can get to it.
Yeah, and even though we have a nice percentage of clients that are in larger cities, there may be, you know, three in Austin, Texas, and five in Los Angeles, and three in San Francisco. You know, they're so all over the place that I can't really pull a niche out of any one of those cities. Matter of fact, most of those clients are clients that had a relationship around Pensacola or a previous office and have either moved or we've taken their kids on another city. And they can be decent-sized clients, but that's the one of the downfalls, not really downfalls, but one of the challenges that you have in being in a town the size of Pensacola is it is a military town. Military, by and large, salaries do not promote, you know, millionaires. But it's a great place to live, and you do get retirees, and you have small pockets, but you can't niche like they told us when we first started in the business. You know, make sure when you pick a niche, there's at least 500 or 1,000 of them in your community. Well, there's nothing that there's 500 or 1,000 of them that have $2.5 million in our community.
Right.
Except attorneys, and that's one of my niches. This is the town that Tobacco built, and I mean the lawsuit against tobacco. There's a lot of ex-tobacco attorneys in this town, and that is one of the niches that we have.
Well, that's great. So that's a good one. That's a solid one.
Yes, and it's a little scary because attorneys, civil suit and mass tort attorneys are not not too dissimilar from rock stars and sports, you know, athletes, superheroes.
Yes. They got big egos and
yes.
Yeah. I'm familiar with that. So you gotta so good. Okay. Look, you're way ahead in this program. So don't panic because you gotta have 90 prospects. You don't. You know, if you had, you know, get 10 prospects that are qualified and put them back into that tracking system and just begin it, just ritualize it, you know, just start to identify, you know, target people too. Who would I like to meet?
Yeah.
You know, who do I need to meet that in order to meet my goals, you know, if they became a client, that'd be a great opportunity. So who are they? Who knows them? Who could introduce me? And how can I make it such that it's a win-win for everybody?
Yeah.
You know, what can I do for them that would be of value? And that's where your service on your boards and the other things come into play.
Yeah.
So
Like I said, we've never had an issue filling it. It's just our door to get on the list now has changed pretty significantly.
Yeah, because you will have an issue filling it because it's not full unless they're qualified.
Right. Yes.
So they're suspects until they're qualified, and then if they're not qualified, they're not on the list. They drop off. So they really never get on the list unless they're qualified, unless you know they have the money that you're willing to take on. So that's very important to mentally get that differentiation. So in total, you know, our goal is to get 10 and then build it up to about 30, my guess. If you can have 30 in that pipeline all the time, I think you'll reach your goal of 10 every year.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And, you know, and again, think globally, not just Pensacola.
Yeah.
So when you have a highly qualified trial attorney, and he happens to be in Cincinnati, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You get introduced to him, you jump on a plane and go see him. So, you know, when your niche is as lucrative as the niche you're talking about, you'll go anywhere to see a prospect.
Yeah. I'm trying to think through my top 25 list, and almost everybody in that list would be willing to introduce us to somebody else that's a friend of theirs, too. By the way, that is a nice little side benefit of handing the mini-me folders out, is when you go through it, there's a page in there of, you know, people who've been introduced. Now I say, if you were kind enough to make an introduction, I always want to keep track of who you introduced and, you know, let you know what happened with that introduction. So as I've shown that to people, I've even had people say, oh, I know two or three people I could put on this list.
See, that's fabulous. And by the way, they really mean that in terms of wanting to track how you did with such and such. Because when somebody gives you an introduction, they really do care how it comes out.
Yes.
And I think FAs, for the most part, think that once they get the introduction, the client is done, and that's not the truth.
Yeah.
The client wants to make sure that thing goes well, that the one they're introducing is happy with you and you're happy with him. So keeping them posted on that relationship without breaking confidentiality is really important to the client.
Yes.
And if you do that well, they will give you more. So think of it as almost a 12-4-2 on that part of the business.
somebody, one of the consultants that I sat in front of, probably in one of these seminars, because I knew I go to a lot of the events, gave a whole process around once an introduction is made, how you continuously follow up with the referring client and say, hey, just want to touch base with you and let you know that Bob and Sue and I had a meeting this last week, went really well. You know, really, really enjoyed getting to meet them. You've got great friends. Just want to give you a heads up. And goes all the way through it again without giving any confidential information on the client. But even to the point of making some anniversary calls. You know, just let them know that, hey, they're now clients of ours. Again, thanks very much. Might have sent them a gift, but a year later. Or 6 months later, I can't remember, just, you know, they would contact and say, hey, by the way, it's been a year since we've worked with Bob and Sue, and, you know, it's just been a great relationship. Again, can't thank you enough. I know you've probably forgotten about it, but I just want to let you know again that it's been a great thing. And I thought it was great. It's just a one-year process from introduction to a year anniversary of them becoming clients, of keeping the referring client in the loop, which, you know, does make them continue to think about, oh, I need to send them somebody else.
Right. Now, who was that coached you on that? Do you remember?
I don't know if I actually was coached on that or if it was, you know, something like at an IMCA seminar, and, you know, a lot of coaches will present at those types of events. I honestly do not remember.
But you know how much I love process, right?
Oh yeah. And actually, it was interesting because before we hooked up, when you were in Fairhope presenting to the Morgan Stanley Group, I had done some research with a group called CEG. Are you familiar with them?
Yes, yeah.
And then also had done some stuff with, oh my gosh, you'll appreciate this, but probably 15 years ago, 16, 14, something like that, one of my district managers called and said, hey, we've got a budget. We want three people in the district to do this new coaching. You know, will you do it? And I'm like, sure. And they hooked me up with Serrano Kelly. I lasted for about 3 months. That guy just wore me out. I had to drop out. I mean, he was beyond up and motivated. He was nuts.
I never have used any of these guys. And I've never been coached by them, and so I don't know what they teach. So I'm always interested in, you know, what are they – I read their – you know, occasionally I'll read their books or something, and but that's funny. So, yeah, I mean, you can get too intense. You know, that's why I like the year-long program here. You give me the feedback that, you know, hey, Rob, I'm drinking from a fire hose. I can't take any more. Then I just back it down and say, okay, we'll cover this next week, you know, cover it in the next week. And then we have, you know, we have 9 months to pick up what we missed. So it's not like, oh, God, we have to get it all, you know, when the book says we have to get it all.
Yeah.
Or when the workbook says it. We don't. We, you know, there can be, look, you're making progress already in acquisition. You're talking the language already. You're adopting the model. I mean, I've got guys that have been coaching for 3, 4, 5 years, and they still aren't where you are in Supernova, the Supernova model. They still don't have all their clients assigned, times and schedules and things. So,
our commitment when we got started was that we were going to drink the Kool-Aid fully. And if it didn't work, we'd have nobody to blame but you. So far, yeah. So we don't want to second guess anything. Even the things, honestly, I did not like the idea of handing them a file. But I said, we agreed to do everything he said, so let's do it. And it's been a very positive experience. It's been actually one of my favorite parts of it.
Isn't that funny? It's just, yeah. We get our own prejudices built up about what works and doesn't work and why the client will be offended by it or why the client won't like this. Yeah, and, you know, God bless you for committing because, you know, I don't know whether you're doing that or not. You could be saying to me every week, yep, we're doing everything. Yep. I don't have a manager there looking over your shoulder, you know. So, no, that's great. That's great. And these acquisition things will all work, okay? None of them will I'm never going to give you something that won't work. The question is, you know, what works best for you in your market and what do you have time for? So I give you 7 strategies. You can practically use, consistently use, maybe 4 or 5 of them, okay? But they all work, and so you might move from one to the other from time to time. Spend more time on one than the other. You know the one that is working now for me with new people?
What's up?
Is LinkedIn. And it's working amazingly well for networking and getting I want you to read another book. I know that, you know, there's not enough time in the world to read, but there's a book by Adam Grant, and it's called Give and Take. And he puts people into 3 categories, givers, takers, and matchers. I like the term givers, takers, and matchmakers, but it's matchers. And
what they the idea is that we probably all spend time in each of those categories. We're all givers from time to time. We're all takers from time to time. And we're also matchers, meaning, you know, I'll match whatever you do. Tit for tat.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give any more than you give. And we spend that, we do that in relationships. We do it in all kinds of things. And they studied 1,200 people, and they came up with this model that they said that, so which of the groups were the most successful? You'd think naturally the takers were. Well, they're the most successful initially. The matchers are next most successful initially, and then the givers are both the worst performing, least successful, and the most successful. And the ones that they studied, why are the ones least successful? Well, it's because the givers failed to ever take. And those are the ones that were the least successful. They didn't look out for themselves. In college, they gave so much time and energy to others and coached others and gave time to the community that their grades slipped. And then when they went to work, they were so busy helping other people, they never got their own work done.
Yep.
So the matchers, you know, they were pretty consistent. But the givers that were able to give but look out for themselves and have a commitment to excellence for themselves were the ones that were the most successful. It took longer, but they were dramatically more successful than any of the other groups. So in everything that I teach and everything that, you know, we talk about servant leadership and giving to give and helping others. And, you know, when you get in these mastermind groups, your purpose isn't to get accounts. Your purpose is to help others and to coach them and to help them and to be of value to them. And then they will, if they're givers, they'll make sure they give to you and help you. And just like you're giving them introductions, they'll be giving you introductions. Sometimes you have to coach them a little bit on it. But the idea is that people that are truly the most successful probably are givers. Now, you don't want to be in a mastermind group or in a relationship of center of influence with a taker. These, you know, Bernie Madoff was a masking himself as a giver was a terrible taker. So takers are not good. I mean, we, from time to time, we have to position ourselves as a matcher or even as a taker. But in the most part, most of us want to give. It's the most universal value that there is internationally. Everywhere in the world, people value the act of giving and helping others more importantly than any other value. Very interesting. And, you know, it's been talked about as the key to happiness is helping others and giving. And for most of us, we know that. And so when I read this book, I was like, oh, finally, I get it. This is what I've been doing my whole life, and we're vindicated. We're not just idiots because we help people. You know, and givers are going to get taken from time to time, and people will take advantage of us. But, you know, I can probably name four times in my life when somebody really took advantage of me. And the other thousands where I've helped people, they've always, you know, helped me, and I've never regretted. So, anyway, read that book. You'll like it. It will help you with your values for your family and everything else that you're doing in your life. And I think it will produce a strategy for you when meeting with these centers of influence and others. So our model of Supernova is perfect. It fits in perfectly with this. But I get back to my LinkedIn model, networking. What the idea is that the number one person on LinkedIn is a guy out in in Silicon Valley that's known to be like the nicest guy in the world. He helps everybody. And he gets people jobs. He helps them. He coaches them. He's a venture capitalist. And so when he gives people money, he also gives them his time and his energy to make sure their business is successful. So when you think of a VC, you think of a vulture, but in this case, he's the nicest guy in the world. And so people really look to him to be their mentor and coach in Silicon Valley, and so he's become a billionaire. The point is that he builds a lot of his networks through LinkedIn. And I've been coaching some new people, and it's working. It's really working. They're getting introductions to people all over the place, but you've got to kind of have a niche. So, you know, find a niche that you really want to explore and start building up your network of people in that niche, whether it be trial attorneys or business owners or, you know, business owners are often too busy for that. But they also need money, and they also are interested in selling their practices. So there's things that can, you know, there's ways of doing it.
Yeah, and both, by the way, trial attorneys and business owners are both very busy people, so it's been a challenge for us to, it's been a challenge for Kelly to try to get some of these people pinned down to get them on a rotating schedule.
Yeah, yeah. They got to believe that there's value in what you do. So when you put on their conversations, ask them about their top three problems that they're dealing with right now. Okay?
Okay.
When you ask questions, ask
three. I love good questions.
When you're asking questions, ask in threes, because it helps them to take a minute to think. So, you know, what are your top three challenges? What are your top three problems that you're dealing with right now in your business? Maybe I can help, maybe I can't. Maybe it just helps to talk about it, because you can't talk about it with anybody else. And then think to yourself, is there any way that I can connect him to somebody that could make his life better?
You know, that actually came up in one of the COI discussions. That wasn't a question I thought to ask, and I apologize. I'm going to have to leave right after this because we have a scheduled 3 o'clock. But, you know, he started talking about, as successful as he's been, where his main problem is, and it was on hiring new good CPAs. And so I wrote that down. I said, wouldn't that be great if I could figure out a way to kind of network him with somebody who can provide a better stream of qualified candidates? He said it's not that they have the CPAs, it's just to find people that are willing to work. So that was one of the issues that came up, and I've been thinking, like, what can I do? How can I connect them? So that's a great question.
Well, one of the things you can do is to go to the head of the accounting department at your local, you know, any university, and ask them for the hardest working, smartest person that they have.
Yeah.
Okay, and bring them in as an intern. Make sure that they're good, and then give them to him.
Yeah. All right, and I apologize, Rob. That is I've got that call coming up. I'm going to switch over. You've got me on this tight schedule.
I know. I'm with you, and I need to get off too. But thank you, and very successful. You know, brainstorming with you is fun, and look forward to it. Just come up with some success stories for me. That's what I love.
I will.
All right. Thanks, guys. All right. Bye-bye.